The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Dr. Smith, today's topic is one that we've discussed before on Healthy Ulster Radio. And it couldn't be more important. It's preventing heart disease and stroke. And the reason why it couldn't be any more important is because heart disease is the leading cause of premature death in the United States. Mm-hmm. And as you know, it is also the second leading cause of premature death in, right here in Ulster County. And we're very fortunate to have a guest who we've had on before, and her name is Carolyn Torella. She's the Regional Communications Director with the Hudson Valley American Heart Association. Welcome, Carolyn.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Carolyn, what can people do? Can you outline for us what people can do to help prevent heart disease and stroke?
Yep. You know, preventing heart disease and stroke is really important because more than 80% of heart disease and stroke is preventable. So you can save a lot of lives just by making simple lifestyle choices which can improve your health. So it's really not rocket science. Like, we know the causes of heart disease and stroke. We know where it comes from, most of the time. And the majority of it is preventable. So really, like, high topic would be exercise. That's a main one. That's the magic pill everybody talks about. Eating healthy, which is including a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, high fiber, low sodium, low sugar, and lean meats and oily fish. You want to include like salmon and trout. Quitting smoking, really imperative to drop the smoking habit. There's so many ways online that you can get resources. And then, you know, with the New York State Quit Smokers, mm-hmm. you can get resources there as well. And, you know, I would recommend for anybody who's tried it and failed to just keep trying. It takes many attempts to quit smoking and enlist the support of friends and family, because it really takes such a toll on your body. It's important to try and quit, and for your family as well. Lowering stress is kind of of all the lifestyle factors, lowering stress is kind of a newer one that we're looking at. And we realize that, you know, inflammation is really kind of the upcoming thing to talk about when it comes to heart disease and stroke. And stress does a number on inflammation in the body. So,
and really diminishing the immune system as
yes,
well.
Yes. So we really need to learn more about stress in our own lives, identify it, and then, you know, make steps, routine steps to make incorporated into your lifestyle to lower stress in your life. And then knowing your numbers like blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugar, that's huge. You know, a lot of people, they skip their doctor's appointments every year. That one's covered, you know, if you have insurance. And because it's boring or it seems like not important at all. But those numbers, those three numbers that they get as a takeaway from that one annual physical, can really be a red flag for a lot of different illnesses. So it's important to know those numbers and get that checked every year.
And those numbers can change over time.
Yeah.
So, you know, if someone has never had an issue with high blood pressure you know, has considered themselves sort of that's not a problem that they've had to deal with, well, as time goes on, very often it does become an issue.
Right.
So the sooner you know about it, the sooner you see the physician and get treatment, the better for your body, for sure.
And we did, the American Heart Association last November did release new high blood pressure guidelines, which dropped the level of high blood pressure from 140 over 90 down 10 points on either side of that. So, you know, what that does is really help to identify people, even at an earlier stage now, that they're in the high blood pressure category, so that they can get treated earlier to prevent the bad things from happening, like heart attack, like stroke. So it puts them on a prevention course much earlier than they would have gotten if they stayed, if that level was a little higher.
How does one treat high blood pressure, Dr. Smith?
Certainly it can be treated with various medications, mm-hmm. But certainly lifestyle behavioral changes are something that is always a part of that. It may precede going on medication, but then again, it may be combined with medication, depending on how high your your blood pressure is and what the issues are, you know. So mm-hmm. things like weight loss, if you're overweight or obese, are important. Again, the dietary changes, like more fruits and vegetables and eating more soluble fibers, they're all important aspects of how you can help to reduce your blood pressure. And getting outside, taking a daily walk or exercise in moderation can also be very helpful.
Exactly. And sodium is a big one. You know, dietary sodium, the American Heart Association recommends no more than 1,500 milligrams per day. And when you think about, you know, people who don't cook a lot and they eat out a lot, they eat at restaurants, the amount of salt in that food, or, you know, in those prepared frozen meals,
right,
especially
processed foods,
if you're not getting the kind of healthy, you know, choice ones that are lower in sodium, lower in sugar, then the amount of, like, check the label. Like, we, American Heart Association, other health advocates have fought hard to get menu labeling on packaged foods, but also in restaurants, so that you can see clear as day the sodium, the fat, the calories. And then that will help you make healthier choices. Because I can tell you, I've sat at restaurants, you know, where they have the thing where you sit, where you can watch the cook prepare everything right in front of you. And they go in with a handful of salt, like for a hamburger. And I'm like, it's a hamburger. It's like three tablespoons of salt. And I'm like, that just, like, a teaspoon would have blown it out of the water for the day. And you put a tablespoon. And that's just what I could see. That's right. Not even what they're cooking with. So really, that's why it's so important to learn how to cook healthy at home. Bring your meals as, you know, often as you can. But also when you're out, make healthy choices. You know, pick from the healthy side. They help you now with the menu. They put a little green on there. Or, you know, you can make healthy choices. It doesn't always have to be salad.
Right.
You know?
And Ulster County had one of the first calorie menu labeling laws in New York State.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also the Choose 600 initiative that we had. And but, you know, the CDC actually, earlier I went through some of the CDC guidelines, and they have a wonderful a bit of information for readers as to, you know, how do you make, say, a healthier choice if you go to an Italian restaurant? Well, maybe you should consider ordering something with a tomato-based or marinara sauce
instead,
as opposed to an Alfredo sauce.
Right.
Things of that nature, where, you know, just making that kind of an adjustment, it's not meaning that you're eating anything that's less flavorful or satisfying, but it's one versus the other, and they can vary tremendously in the amount of fat and salt and calories.
And minimizing the sugar sweetened beverages. A lot of the chain restaurants now, like the Olive Gardens of the world and Applebee's and all, they have menu selections under 600 calories. However, they give you these humongous soda cups with unlimited refills.
Right.
So it just negates any of the sensible eating.
I know. And people have, I think they have a detachment of the amount of sugar that they're drinking on a daily basis. Like if you go to get a coffee beverage, you know, all the fast food places have, like, you know, their own coffee beverages, and that the amount of sugar in those prepared, you know, lattes and frappuccinos, all these things, it's insane how much. I remember getting, my friend brought back, you know, a cup of coffee from a place, and she just got what she thought everybody liked, and I drank it. I was like, this is so sweet. And I looked in the bottom of the cup. There was literally an inch of sugar. When I poured the coffee out, an inch left of sugar in the cup.
In our health displays, when we go out to events, we do a sugar equivalent. We fill up a plastic bag next to an empty can, a soda can or bottle or fruit drink or whatever, to show how much sugar is in it.
Right.
And some of them are like, you know, 12 teaspoons of sugar, even the so-called healthy natural ones.
Right.
So you really do have to be careful.
Yep.
And getting back to the prevention, family history seems to be part of the equation too. Is that not right?
Right. And that's the one you can't change. You know, you have to be aware of it. And because, especially, like, cardiologists will tell you that if you've had someone in your family with a heart attack, that whatever, however old they were when they had their heart attack, you should be seeing the cardiologist 10 years before that, because you might have the same things going on in your body that led them to a heart attack. So you really want to get ahead of that cholesterol, high blood pressure, anything going on there, because you can't change your family. You can't change your DNA, but you can change the prevention and the maintenance of that in advance of when you might have something urgent.
Now, in reading the notes for the program, you sent over three new initiatives that American Heart Association has just launched. One has to do with diabetes and the connection between diabetes and heart disease. Mm-hmm. The other is physical activity. Mm-hmm. And the third is new cholesterol guidelines. But let's start with the diabetes. Right. What is that one about?
So this is exciting, I think, for us because we don't always have a chance to collaborate with other great nonprofits in the health arena. And this one is a combination of American Heart Association and the American Diabetes Association. And we're really kind of coming at diabetes from a two-pronged front because we realize that people aren't aware that diabetes and type 2 diabetes especially can affect your risk of having heart disease. They don't make the connection between the two. And I don't think we've made the case well enough that of the physical effect of having diabetes on arteries.
Right, it's a major contributor to heart disease. And the risk of dying from a heart attack or a stroke if you do have diabetes are that much greater than the general mm-hmm. population.
Right. And the number of people having type 2 diabetes, adult onset, they used to call it, and the metabolic syndrome, of course, is increasing as obesity increases. And that's putting a lot of people at risk for heart attack and stroke. And again, you know, typically type 2 diabetes is really a disease of lifestyle choice. So much of it can be prevented or controlled with lifestyle things like we just talked about, eating healthy, reducing that blood sugar, increasing the fiber in the diet, exercise.
Quitting smoking.
Mm-hmm. What are the real health effects of type 2 diabetes, aside from the connection to heart disease? But it's a precursor to diabetes, but does it have its own inherent dangers?
Type 2 diabetes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It actually is a form of diabetes, mm-hmm. otherwise known as adult onset. And,
okay.
you know, it affects all of the major organs, the heart, the kidney, the brain, et cetera, all the vasculature. So it has multiple effects on the body.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, we'd like to hear a lot more about the other initiatives of physical activity and cholesterol guidelines, but first we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
The heart is a complex organ, but finding specialized cardiovascular care in Poughkeepsie and Kingston is so easy. Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital are now home to WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute, the Hudson Valley's largest multi-specialty cardiovascular practice. They have state-of-the-art diagnostics and innovative imaging and testing technologies. You'll receive comprehensive cardiac and vascular care from some of the world's top cardiologists and vascular surgeons. You'll also have a seamless connection to advanced care at WMC Health's flagship hospital, Westchester Medical Center. The best cardiovascular care comes from the best people, and now the very best are right in your backyard. Visit wmchealth.org/heart to discover more about WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital. Members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMC Health, advancing care here.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guest today is Carolyn Torella, Regional Communications Director with the Hudson Valley American Heart Association. Carolyn, before the break, we were talking about some of the new recommendations and guidelines for blood pressure and cholesterol. Can you tell us where we can find more of that information?
Sure. Well, we were talking about the diabetes especially, and there's a new website we just launched last week, actually, which is called knowdiabetesbyheart.org, and KNOW, and it's got all the information about type 2 diabetes, makes the link between that and heart disease, and it gives you tips. You can sign up for an action plan. So we really want to help people get ahead of that and make that something of the past. We were talking about scientific sessions when I came in, and that's American Heart Association's largest scientific conference dedicated to cardiovascular disease and stroke. And that's happened this weekend in Chicago, 3 days, $14,000 doctors come from all over the world. It's the largest conference of that size.
Impressive.
And they come to learn new science, new treatments, hear firsthand from the researchers who developed their own research to talk about treatment. And amazing things come out of it. I got to go last year. It was really exciting. And that was when they released the new blood pressure guidelines. But this year they talked about new cholesterol guidelines. And really now what they're talking about is kind of having a lifespan approach to cholesterol in people, and even starting an approach as young as children, because we know through science and research that heart disease starts, like artery clogging starts in youth.
Wow.
I was going to say, so maybe we could talk about what is arterial cholesterol?
Yeah, I was just going to ask. Yeah. Thank you.
What is cholesterol? It's a waxy type substance in the body. Again, genes do play a role in how high one's cholesterol is, as does diet. But the cholesterol tends to lay down what we call plaques sequentially over time, and what happens is eventually those plaques start narrowing the blood vessels, mm-hmm. so that you're having less and less of positive blood flow through those vessels. And in places like the heart, for instance, that kind of a narrowing in the blood vessel ultimately can starve the heart of the blood that it needs to function as a muscle, and then subsequently develop a heart attack, mm-hmm. which then is a loss of, or sort of a death of the cardiac muscle that is supplied by that compromised artery.
Mm-hmm. And what do the new guidelines, how do they differ from previous guidelines? What new information is in the updated guidelines that would help prevent that buildup?
It was really about really the approach to it by the clinical staff of when to attack cholesterol, but really it was more about talking about in general terms with the patient, because I think it was always focused on this number has to be this and this number has to be that, and you have to be below 200 for total. Now they're really approaching it from a different way, which is to talk about it as a prevention, to know the risk factors, the family history, and then get on a path that gets you out of those risky numbers. But even, we were talking before about kids, is they're actually including children in the recommendation of cholesterol to have them tested at a young age, as early as 2 years old, it says, especially if they have a family history of heart disease. So I think that that's going to be huge. And these guidelines are, incorporated into clinical practice pretty soon after. I mean, the doctors mm-hmm. go to learn about it, to understand what they should do, and then they are given practical guidelines to take back with them to the doctor's office. So hopefully your doctor on your next visit will be treating you with the latest science, like mm-hmm. the new blood pressure guidelines from last year, like the new cholesterol guidelines from this year.
And it also talks here about monitoring people over 20 who don't have a history in their family of cardiovascular right. disease, but who should be assessed every 4 to 6 years right. to check.
Yep. Right. It's, because we know how to treat high cholesterol. And if we know how to treat it. We have to identify the people who have it. Mm-hmm. So if we're not looking for it in people in their 20s, we're going to miss it. And then it's going to build up to a point where they might have a heart attack or a piece of that plaque breaks off and then they gets clogged in the in the brain.
And again, the earlier you begin to adjust your diet right. so that you acclimate to a diet that's more heavily invested in fruits and vegetables as opposed to fatty meats or high saturated fat items. Mm-hmm. So that will certainly help during the development of the individual adolescence and into their adulthood.
Mm-hmm. And Carolyn, a short while ago, the National Institute for Health issued a warning of the risks associated with sitting and sedentary office jobs, pretty much equating it to the risk associated with smoking. And it was an eye-opener for me, because it said even if you go to the gym 3 times a week, if you have a desk job where you're sitting for 8 or more mm-hmm. hours a day, that you are at high risk. And I was really... I was really taken back by that. Yeah. In response, the federal government has just updated recommendations for physical activity for the first time in 10 years. Can you review those for us?
It's really about getting 150 minutes per week. So that's about 22 minutes of movement per day. And what the changes too is that they used to say you had to have 10 minutes in a row and you had to have, a certain amount of vigorousness to the exercise. Really now that what they're talking about is a kind of a total number of 150 minutes per week, and it doesn't have to be a formal exercise, taking stairs. So that means like when you park at the far end of the parking lot, those extra steps count. When you take the elevator instead of the escalator, or the elevator, mm-hmm. I mean, when you take the stairs, I'm sorry, instead of the elevator, that counts.
And your smartphone will register it all.
Right. Well, I mean, I read that recommendation. I literally got out of my chair, and we actually have a treadmill desk in the office, and it's, I use that.
Well, like, you'll see people at our office.
I try and get on it
continually throughout the day, walking around the grounds.
Yep. And there is apps actually that remind you to get up from your desk, you know, mm-hmm. once or twice an hour, even just a few minutes to walk. Because, you know, we're so digitized now that our jobs, you know, even though there's a person working over there, I'm going to email her. I'm not going to get up and walk around and go talk to her. I'm going to email her and she's going to email me back. We never get out of our chairs. Hours can pass. And that is not good for your circulation. It does permanent damage.
And I think it really is important to emphasize that it doesn't have to be formal exercise, right. Because some people say, oh, you know, I'm not... No, I'm just
you
not
quit
right
before
for the
you
gym,
begin.
Right.
Or, you know,
right. I don't go to the gym.
That,
that's a big one. Right.
That, you know, you can just incorporate it into your lifestyle. We mm-hmm. we did a media campaign for several years, and we still do, called Walk and Water, which says that you don't need expensive weight loss programs mm-hmm. or exercise programs. You can just walk for 30 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. Take a friend, take your favorite pet, take your partner.
Yes, walking your dog.
Or by yourself and enjoy a nice walk. Yep. And substitute water for sugar sweetened beverages.
Yes.
If you did nothing else but those two things, you'd come a long way.
Yep. Just chopping out like that weekly soda, it will save you pounds over a course of a year. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. And you know, I mean, we're so blessed in the Hudson Valley. We have this beautiful place. People come from all around the world to see what we have here every day. Mm-hmm. And we stay in the house and watch TV. Yeah. You know, get out of the house.
A world-class rail trail system in the process of being completed.
Right, you don't really have to ride your bike. You don't have to wear the fancy yellow outfit and go on the speedy bike. You can just literally put your sneakers on and just go for a 15-minute walk with your colleague at lunchtime. Just cut your lunch in half. Go for a walk. It's really, you're going to feel so much better when you come back.
Absolutely.
And you're going to have more focus.
And I think when it's fun and doesn't seem formal, doesn't seem like a tedious requirement, you know, that people can actually incorporate it into their lives.
Right.
So, Carolyn, we worked together on several initiatives in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. and we know that American Heart Association does advocate for what's called policy and systems change. Can you highlight a few of those things for us?
Yeah, we had a very exciting year in the past kind of 12 months, I would say, of rolling through the Tobacco 21 legislation in six counties, I think we're up to in the Hudson Valley.
Including Ulster.
You guys are kind of ahead of the curve there. It started kind of a trickle down in Orange and Rockland Sullivan, then it kind of swooped up to Ulster, and then Westchester was like, wait a minute, let me get on this. And they passed it, and then Putnam passed it, which we were kind of shocked at because it was...
I think Dutchess is the only outlier.
That's my county, so I get very frustrated. We're working with the county executive to try and get that back on for a policy initiative this year. But we're working on a statewide... policy as well, because we know that's where the big numbers are going to come.
Well, the more counties that adopt the T21 local legislation,
right.
I think that'll help move the state as a whole. So that's important.
And they did do a study in Massachusetts when they initiated Tobacco 21 a few years ago, and which was great that they did the study and they took the data, and they did see a huge percentage drop in the number of kids who were smoking after they initiated that. It was double digit drop. So we know it works. And they say that if you studies show that if you got to 21 years of age without ever having smoked, that your chance of ever smoking goes down to 2%. Which right now, you know, in high school, smoking is about, between 13 and 17.
Right, and 90, I think 90-plus percentage of addicted adult smokers started before age 21.
Right.
So every year that you can delay that.
Now
we
have to battle the vaping among our youth and adolescents. It's a form of nicotine addiction, and then it's a spiraling down again.
Yep, and so we're fighting on that front as well with the e-cigarettes and Juuls and all that. So there's some changes coming with the FDA. We're hoping for more stringent rules on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us also, if folks want to learn more about what we've discussed today, mm-hmm. I know we always have too little time, and they want to learn more or be in touch, where do they go?
They can visit us online at heart.org/Hudson Valley, and that's kind of our homepage, and we have event information on there, but also a link back to our main heart.org page, which you can find all the health information that we just talked about today. And I did want to say we have great events coming up, including
Dutchess
Ulster Heart Walk. is we're moving it to Dutchess Community College this year, and that's on April 13th. In February, we have a new exciting event, the Cycle Nation. That's coming to New Windsor in February. So check it out on our Hudson Valley page.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're out of time. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.